Hello and welcome back to Can You Put Me on Guest List. I'm Katie Knight and today on the podcast is my wonderful and talented friend Emma Chambers. Emma is the founder of Acrylic Artists, a global PR company based in the UK that specialises in the promotion of electronic music for artists, labels, clubs and events. Formerly known as So Dark It's Light in the early days, she rebranded the company 4 years ago to Acrylic Artists and has been working in music PR now for 8 years. The agency has seen a steady growth in its client list, always sourced by word of mouth through client recommendations, and today has worked with the likes of Amelie Lenz, Artcore, Dubfire, Eats Everything, Exhale, Farago, Marco Faraone, Pete Tong's DJ Academy, Pamport, Parallel, WAF, the list goes on. I have known Emma for quite some time now, so it was really nice to have her on the podcast and have a bit of a giggle and a laugh and go down memory lane. But she's achieved so much over the last few years. It was really great to talk to her about the blurred lines between working and personal life in the music industry, because I think it's something that happens to quite a lot of us. Socializing and work can sometimes kind of become the same thing. We talk about networking, if as a PR you actually have to like the music you're pitching, is PR necessary for the successful career of a DJ, and so much more. If you're listening to this and you would prefer to watch it, you can watch this podcast on Spotify and also on YouTube. And please remember to subscribe for more. Season 5 kicked off last week and there are some really great guests coming up this season, so make sure you don't miss any of them. This is Emma Chambers on Can You Put Me on Guest List. Enjoy.
Right, here we go.
Here we go, Emma Chambers on Can You Put Me on Guest List. Hi.
Hiya.
It was really weird interviewing you.
Hiya. I'm Emma. Nice to meet you.
Hi, I'm Katie. How did we actually How did we even meet the first time?
We lived, both of us, in Barcelona, and I figured out just before this podcast, I think it was 12 or 13 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of done the backtrack of like stages of my life. And yeah, I think I moved there when I was 26.
Wow. That's how long we've known each other.
About 11 years, actually, yeah.
That was a good time in Barcelona.
It was, I remember. We were so young.
We are still so young.
Why not?
Here you are.
Young and, yeah, it was a good time in Barcelona because I think, like, we had a really nice group of friends there.
Yeah.
And also, it was quite like a community of us. I mean, it was a nightmare. We just used to go out for dinner and not come home until, like, Thursday. But everything... But it was like, it was just a really group of people. And I feel like at that time, Barcelona got like some really good restaurants, got some really nice bars. And it was just like such a vibe. I mean, I don't know if you've been back lately, but it didn't feel the same to me. I don't know whether that's because everyone's left.
Yeah, I haven't been back for ages, actually. But I did really enjoy that time of my life. That was really fun. It was like the beginning of my career in music as well.
Yeah, same. I was like, I didn't actually.
You're probably one of the first people I met in music.
Yeah, I think so. I think you were interviewing one of my friends at a club and someone was like, you should meet each other. You're both from England. You're both a bit crazy. You should meet. You're going to really get on. And I think I met you at that soup restaurant in Poblenó. And then we were just like, yeah, we'll be friends. And here we are.
Stopper.
That was really good. Because you were like, I swear you were vegan at the time or vegetarian.
Yeah.
So we had to go to a soup restaurant for you.
As you do. Super Katie. Can you also remember that cocktail place we used to go to, Crepes Alborn?
That's still one of my favourites. Actually, somebody, I have a PDF like sheet on my laptop of all the places to go in Barcelona. And it's still on there. And I send it to everyone. It's with the swinging lights.
Yeah.
And they have the really good Bloody Marys. They're really, really good.
You love a Bloody Mary, don't you?
I do, but I'm not drinking right now. So no Bloody Marys for me.
How does it feel not drinking?
It's been really nice. I'm almost at, it sounds pathetic, I'm almost at a month.
That's not pathetic, that's really good.
I'm not a big drinker during the week. Like, I'm really heavily into fitness and things, so it's just not something, I don't ever go home and think I want a glass of wine. But with what we do, it just kind of goes hand in hand with going on a night out and, you know, if you go to an event or somewhere that you don't know somebody or you don't know many people, it, you know, it's stupid to say it, but like having a drink is, does make things easier.
Yeah.
Socially. But I'm trying to figure out if it's like a job that is still like possible, essentially, not drinking every time you go out. I mean, ADE is going to be a challenge. That's what, another 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And I didn't want to drink until then. So, or I don't know, maybe I'll keep it going, but we'll see.
This is a really good place to start the podcast, actually, because it's something that plays on my mind quite a lot working in this industry. And that is the blurred lines between social life and your working life. Like sometimes I feel like I will, everything just kind of jumbles into one whole thing. And I sometimes find it hard to separate when I am not working and when I am, because when I'm not working, I will still probably go out to a club or I'll go to a festival and I'll always end up with people in the industry and people I work with. So I find that quite difficult to separate sometimes. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, or if it, maybe it's a good thing because all of my really close friends work in the same industry and it's a cool thing. But I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I feel very much the same. I've been in the industry for what, like 8 years now. And the more I've been in it, the less and less I have friends which aren't in it. So I find myself, like you and I, you know, we're friends because of that job. And I have a ton of other people. I mean, we meet so many people. Not everyone's going to be your best friend. You know, they're there just for the good time, or they're there because, you know, you can either help their career or, you know, and the people will come and go. But I do have a really amazing set of friends, which I have met, but they are all industry people. And I still really love the music. For me, I still love going to a club, but that experience has changed as well, because I used to do that in my personal life to have fun. And now it's like, well, if I go to a club, there's this person here, there's this person here. I really need to see people. I need to, it's important to stay current in this job. Editors change all the time. Management teams change all the time. If you don't go out for a year, that's going to take a massive impact on your career. And so I feel that I go out when it's work. And even if I, if it's not work, it still is work. So it's just one huge crossover, essentially.
But do you feel like working in this industry, that sense of raving and going to the dance floor has kind of been taken away a little bit, because it's more like, well, we're going to go backstage, see who's there from the industry. Let's go and network. Because I sometimes think, I don't remember the last time I danced on a dance floor. And we work in.
I don't remember the time I went on the... Oh, actually, I went to Wilderness Festival, which is around here where I live in Oxfordshire, a few weeks ago in the summer. And obviously, it's a very different festival to, like, I mainly predominantly work with techno artists. I mean, I do work with a few other house artists as well, but I do end up going to, like, the Awakenings, the Time Warps, all those kind of events. And my postman is here.
Your postman is here.
So I'm on a call.
What is he delivering?
So I don't know. I'm going on a hiking trip. So I think he's delivering something that I've got. I can't answer the door.
You can answer if you want. We'll just wait for you.
He's just gonna drop it there, it's fine. I knew this was gonna happen. Whatever are we? Yeah, so I went to Wilderness and it was really fun because we did have backstage, but like we actually danced, and I danced to like music that I'm not even into, and it was fun, but it's a much different festival. It's lots of family, lots of kids. It was like, you know, very hippie vibes in Oxfordshire for 3 days. It was lovely. But I do remember the last time that I raved when I felt like I hadn't felt in years. And where was that? I went to see Indira Paganotto and Aerod and The Brutalists, and they were all playing at E1 earlier this year. I can't remember when it was. I planned to leave at 2 a.m. No, I stayed till the, like, 7.
A surprise.
But I was like soaked through from like head to foot. I remember I was dancing so crazy and I didn't even look at my phone and I just didn't care. And I walked away from that thinking like, oh my God, that was the best.
Yes.
And I haven't done that in ages. And I really missed it. I didn't get on the dance floor because believe me, the dance floor looked scary that night. Mm. It was like, you couldn't even get to the toilet. It was so packed. But yeah, I got the feeling of that. And it made me realize that I do still really enjoy it. And I can if I try.
I, for the last few pyramids that they do at Amnesia in on the terrace, I've been doing the live broadcast every Sunday, and then obviously the main room is more techno, and I don't know why I did it about, must have been about the second or third pyramid of the season, and I was like, I'm just gonna go in and just stand right in the middle of the crowd, because I never feel what that's like at Amnesia, especially Amnesia. And I love Amnesia. I will do that on the Amnesia closing because that's like my favorite event. And once I'd done that once, I was like, every time I go back now, I do it every single time and just like go crazy, have a proper dance, don't look at your phone, don't worry about anything, don't worry about anyone. And it is such a nice feeling. And I think sometimes we forget to do that working in the music industry. So doing that now and again, it kind of reminds you like why we're there, what we're doing there.
I do worry that sometimes I take people that are, they love the music, and I'm saying, oh, why don't you come with me? You know, it'll be fun. I love when I can. If I know somebody's really like passionate about it and they want to go, like there's nothing nicer to be able to know that I'm in a position that I can actually offer somebody a guest list. It's like a really nice thing. And I love doing it for people, because I think back to that time when I was like, if somebody had got me guest list to like Fabric, it would be like, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
So to be able to just do something so small is nice. But I do worry when I take those people and they're with me, they get really pissed off at me, because they're like, we haven't seen you all night. You don't go on the dance floor. You're no fun. You're in the backstage room just talking shit all night long. And I'm like, you know what? I say to a lot of people, you know, when you go to work in an office and you go to like a boardroom and you have your meeting, the green room is my boardroom. It's like full of all the people at work that you need to connect with, but it's just on a really unprofessional level. Like, I mean, they're not unprofessional, but
different level.
Yeah, that's kind of like the way, well, I mean, you're not like having a cigarette or like, you know, but it's a good way to kind of like make it a little bit more, other people understand it, I think.
But I do
tend to avoid to go clubbing with people that aren't in the industry because of that reason. And I feel like I don't want to leave them on their own, or are they okay, you know?
Yeah. It's nice just to go out with, I mean, as you said, I really enjoy being able to give people guest lists and take people out and stuff. But it's nice, for example, say if me and you go out, we know that, okay, we might walk in together, but I might not see you for like 5 hours. And I'll be like, oh,
I don't see you for 5 hours. What are you talking about?
They'll see you like just leaving.
Or I could get a message from you. Where are you? At like 6 a.m.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I think there's like elements of it, but I often, like I said to you, I'm not drinking at the moment. So I think that's been easier because I've not been out.
Yeah.
So when I start going out again, I do have this, it's like a little, an itch you need to scratch, you know? And I think it's kind of like that when I haven't been out for ages and I go out and then I remember, oh, I know why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
You know, or I really enjoy it. So I think, yeah, it's not all the time, but I need it sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely. So you've been working in the music industry for 8 years, haven't you?
I think it's eight, yeah.
8 years. That's gone so, you've done so much in 8 years. Like since,
have I?
Yeah. Like just thinking back on everyone that you've worked with and the places that you've been and the projects you've worked on, you've absolutely smashed it in 8 years.
Thanks. It's kind of weird to, a lot of people ask me how I got started and I'm just like, not really. It's like a bit of a stupid story because I was working in a city in London before, and I was like an executive assistant or like personal assistant for company directors or high net worth individuals. And I used to work all over the world. So I used to live in other places, and I just like quit one day and just moved to Spain. I had no job. I had no idea how I was going to make money. But I'd met friends and I'd been introduced to a lot of DJs, and everyone was like, you know, why don't you try PR? And I'm like, yeah. For 2 years, it was impossible. I didn't earn any money. It was really, really hard. And I was just about to give up. And then I had a couple of clients that took me on, and they were really happy with the work that I did. Looking back now, it was probably shit, the work that I did. But you know,
well, obviously they wasn't, because you got you where you are, so.
Well, again, true, yeah. But I mean, I guess your parameters for like what you think is successful, but it changes as you get better. And they just literally told a few people about me, and then I started getting emails from people that I never heard of, and it was hard. Like, talking about going to parties, I went to every single party I could to meet people. Mm. I went to every after party. I got every single magazine. I ripped out the contacts page on the front of the print when they all had print. Ripped out all of the contacts pages. I wrote down a spreadsheet of all of the contacts, what regions they looked after, what features they looked after, and I just cold emailed all of them. But I tried to do it in such a personal way that, like, they knew it was an email that was actually from someone. It wasn't just a blanket. Somehow. I've never, as a publicist, I will never, ever send a mass email. You know, occasionally for like a news thing, when it's to loads of people and it's something simple, but when it comes to features and things like that, I will never do it, because I think there's nothing worse than getting just a carbon copy email that's not even addressed to like the right person sometimes. And that got me a long way doing that, you know. They didn't reply. I mean, like, I don't know how many times I must have messaged some of them. And like, right, let's find their Instagram instead. So I went onto Instagram and I'm like, hiya.
And I'm me like, again.
Yeah. And I just tried to be a nice person. I just tried to be me. I just tried to be real. And I'm like, yeah, look, I've not got much experience, but this is what I want to try and do. I don't know if this is a person you'd feature. And actually, a lot of people wrote back. And I just, amazing. And I grew it from that. COVID took a massive hit on that, because so many magazines stopped doing print, so many teams changed, so many editors left, so obviously so many people went into furlough. And then when everything came back again, I felt like the direction some of the magazines were going was different. They all of a sudden had a whole new kind of staff, and you didn't know any of them, so it was like, shit, I'm gonna have to go all the way back to the beginning and redo all of this again. And it was quite hard actually after COVID to figure out also the direction of a lot of magazines. Something about PR that's really difficult, I don't know if you've spoken to other people, but, you know, it's magazines are tastemakers, really. They're looking for, like, not necessarily just what's current now, but what's going to be in the future. And I think a lot of the time you could maybe looking after an artist that's been really big in the past and they've had support from somebody a couple of years ago. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to happen now. So the landscape of PR has changed quite a lot, like, you know, just how things are done and what they're into. And if an artist doesn't have a narrative behind their music right now, it's difficult to generate a really interesting package behind an artist that is really like digestible to an editor and be like, yeah, wow, this is something that will resonate with our readers.
Is it easier, for example, to pitch somebody that's upcoming, super fresh, that's really hot in the moment, but maybe not so well known, or somebody that is really big, that has been around for years, has a huge following, but is currently probably not really doing that much?
That's a really difficult question. It all depends, I think, on the genre.
Mm-hmm.
I think if that young artist has got a narrative,
yeah,
they've got something, you know, a lot of people come to me with an EP and they're like, let's do loads of interviews and stuff, and I'm like, about what? I know you've got this EP and I know you think it's amazing and it's your project, and I'm not saying that it's not, but you need to build a narrative, not necessarily just behind the music, but about you as a person. Like, what's different about you? What have you got that's going on? If you're an older artist, like, what's the story here? What have we not already touched 20 years ago in your career? Like, how have you evolved? What do you think of the current landscape of dance music? What do you think of the BPM race? That's always a big topic, you know?
Yeah.
You need to look at current issues within the industry that might be getting talked about and dive into how that artist can apply themselves to that and how they can create a story behind it. So to answer your question, neither really. It's all just dependent on how they can build something behind themselves. Because you also have to pitch specific genres, specific platforms. You know, I can't pitch. I have some extremely hard techno, and then I've done some projects for Fatboy Slim. I mean,
yeah.
It's completely good. And he, someone like Norman is like such a legend and such an amazing person. There's always a narrative about him, and he's always doing something fresh, and he's always doing something charity, or that's always going to be something which is said easier to pitch. but it's going to be something which people are interested in.
Do you think that PR is necessary for an artist's career to be successful?
I don't think anything is necessary. And like, you know, I don't think a lot, some, I think social media is probably necessary, but a lot of people say to me, like, when should I start doing PR? And that's just like, well, it, again, it just comes back to that. If you've got something to tell, if you've got some great music that's out, then there's no right or wrong time to do PR. But I think it does definitely help. It gives you content to share on socials when you just haven't got, if you haven't got any gigs, you haven't got that many gigs, but you've had a really big release with a label. Like, you're going to have, we can get you a really nice interview. We can get you a little, like, a print chart in a magazine. We can get you an exclusive premiere with a platform, which is going to help boost your track. And all of that is going to have an asset, and all of those assets can be shared online. And people will see it. If you're on the cover of a magazine, promoters will see that. Promoters are going to take note to people on the cover of a magazine or doing events for editorial events and so on. So it can help. Also, a lot of people want to, you know, apply for visas in the States because, you know, America, the scene is really popping off and we've got lots of nice media options there. And you have to have a presence there. And it's difficult. If you haven't got gigs, how are you going to have a presence in America to get the PR, to get the visa? So
it's kind just of like a full cycle.
Exactly. So trying to translate a story from the artist that's applicable to the US media and building them some kind of presence there with bits online is definitely helpful.
Do artists take on PR throughout the whole of their career, or is it normally by if they've got something happening or something that needs promoting, or do you have artists that are just have PR throughout the whole of the year?
So I have a combination. I always explain to people that, like, well, if you're going to come and do PR, I'm not going to take someone who's just going to come on for a month. You can't achieve anything in a month. Like, it takes a couple of weeks just to me to get all the assets together to build that narrative that I was telling you about. And you put pictures out, and, you know, print lead times are 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm pitching something at the beginning of October. Stuff's going to start happening end of November into December. And then, but they only wanted to do a month. So, you know, you end up working up until the end of the year and they're like, oh, but I just want a month of PR. And I'm like, that's just not going to work. So I just a minimum of like 4 months, 4 to 6 months, ideally. But you need to ensure that you do have stuff going on. You know, you need to have some releases. And if you haven't got a release, you need to have some kind of really big, maybe project that you're involved in. You know, I have a couple of clients who are, I can't say who or what we're doing yet, but it's International Women's Month in October. And we have like a massive 2-day event where it's like an all female lineup of DJs. And then we've got like a round table podcast conversation topic about mental health, body image, how social media has affected the dance music industry, just everything. That is such an amazing thing to talk about. And that can be used instead of a release. So
yeah,
I get people that come on from one EP. That's fine. I get people that I've got a lot going on and they're like, oh, I just want you to handle everything. I'm like, cool, let's do 4 to 6 months and see how you feel. Mm-hmm. And I'm really honest, very honest. They will often list me things that they want and I will go back to them and be like, I've highlighted in red what's just not going to happen right now. And I can explain to you why I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm not going to sit there and give you a load of targets that I know aren't going to work for your profile at this moment. They might do in 2 years, but like, here are the 4 or 5 other things that we should be doing as like a stepping stone to get you to that. Like, it's a strategy. We need to build a strategy. So to answer your question, yeah, I do prefer having them long term because you can definitely, you can like, get better results.
You can build something. Do you think as well that the in terms of the type of content that you're pitching, whether it be, you know, something more personal, something more to find out more about the artist's personality works. How am I trying to say this? Like, has it changed in terms of what people are looking for? Because, for example, I'll get pitched a lot for people to come on the podcast, artists, and it'll be around, oh, they've got a release or they've just got this EP or the, and I don't know. I just would much prefer to talk to an artist to find out more about what their personality is like, what their day to day is like, what their, I don't know, just know more about them. And Do you think that that's something that's changed over the years? Because obviously now there's so much more presence on social media and the artists really starting to show more of what their day to day is like, rather than before it was people would just know them by their music. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I do think, for me, I always say to people that what have I got to pitch for this that's personal? And they're like, why do you want to know that? And I'm like, because there's only so much you can talk about an EP, or what was your inspiration for the EP? Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. You know, it's the same kind of questions. A good example of this actually is WAF. So I look after him and his label, and he's got loads of stuff going on, but he just did a Commune of 13 project, which is like a charity project in Colombia. And that dives into why he works for charities, which he is heavily influenced in, like giving back to the community, as well as with his label, like funds from each of the releases, like each release rescues a dog.
And each release rescues a dog.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, you should go on the Instagram. He puts on the Nature label Instagram. He puts up which dogs have been rescued. And that's an amazing personal story, because that's his choice to do that. And he gives the artist the option who release. So whoever's on the label, he can be like, do you have a specific charity that you want to do something with? If not, this is the dog charity that we work with. Like, we'd love to release this dog. And he does like a whole backstory on the dog's history. And I think that's just, that is the exact type of thing that you're looking for in a client. Something yeah. which is really interesting, really personal. I often also ask people like, what did you do before music? And they're like, well, I've always just done music. I'm like, what, since you were born? I don't think so. I mean, sorry to everyone out there, but like, I haven't just done music since I was 1 year old. There's got to be more to it, you know?
Yeah.
Were there things in your childhood you remember that like, like that, you know? And there is so much more, but I just think that people just don't sit down and just really think about it.
Yeah. Because I think just so much more interesting. Obviously, if you like somebody's music, you want to know more about them. You want to know more about what their life is like, what their day to day is like, what things they do like, what they don't, like how it all started for them. And I think that that's the interesting part of that, because that their music, like, is taught, their story's told then, you know, it's not just, this is the music I'm making. Exactly. That's it. You want to know more.
That's why I encourage people to do podcasts. You know, I try to get all my clients doing a podcast, because, and some of them are a little bit nervous, like me. I hate doing podcasts, and you've got me on this. I can't believe you've managed to get me on a podcast in 8 years.
It took 8 years.
I'm going to hate every minute of this when I read it back.
Listen to it back.
But, yes, that's the one. But yeah, I try to get them to do podcasts because I think it is a way to see like the real person, you know. And especially with you, because I feel like you're very good at interviewing people, and you have a relationship with a lot of my clients and myself and a lot of my friends, where you make it a very comfortable environment to talk to somebody, and you make it easy, like it's a conversation. And I think that's where you get the most of people, when they know someone. You know, we did the project with Pampot and Ibiza, and it was just hilarious because we just had the best day because we're all mates.
Yeah.
And we just had so much fun, and we ate way too much ice cream. We were probably on a massive sugar high. But that is a perfect example of just like how a project can go really well because of the relationship that you have. So yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I much prefer to interview somebody that I have a relationship with, or one of my friends, or I've known for a long time, or interviewed several times before, because it does make it so much easier. Although
so many people.
I know, but there are so many people. Yeah, a lot of people like Eats Everything, for example. He's probably the person I've interviewed the most ever.
Yeah.
And every time I interview him, he gives me a different interview, which is why I love interviewing him, because sometimes I would think to myself, oh, God, I would have asked him. Like, we just talk about something different every single time, whether it be one maybe just about, I don't know, how he started out, or another one would be talking about his first times at Amnesia, and then all of a sudden we'll talk about some random rave story that he would have, and then it just goes on to all of these
different,
which there's a lot of. Exactly. So I feel like the stories would never ever end with him, and I like that when you can interview somebody and I don't have that worry of, oh well, I did ask them that for that media outlet a couple of years ago, so I can't really ask that. It just kind of flows, and that's easy. Although doing an interview with you kind of felt weird at the beginning.
With me?
Yeah, because
what,
you're
started today.
Yeah, like really, really, really good friends, I feel like, because we don't normally we would just have like just well, I mean, me and you just talk shit every single day anyway. So this is kind of a serious conversation.
I'm surprised we actually have anything to talk about. I mean, God.
I know.
There's plenty of stuff that won't make the podcast, I tell you that.
Yeah, there's definitely things that will
we've
not
be. We've got so many stories. My God, we've got some stories. But yeah, for all of you listeners out there, it's not
we could
happen.
Just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and never end.
Where
were we the other day?
That.
Oh, with Liz, who has also been on. So I also had Liz on the podcast, who is a brand manager for Excel. And and the same thing happened there. I was like, why didn't I basically know everything about Liz? But then I realized there was a lot of things that don't. And then when the three of us get together, oh, maybe we should do a podcast, the three of us.
Oh, God, please. It would be a nightmare, us three. we should do it from like from Vita next summer, maybe. Or closings. No, I'm not going to closings. I'm not going there.
You're not coming to closings?
No, yeah. I think I'm just done for the year. Like, of course, I work with Exhale doing the residency at DC10. And I went out, I think it was 3 times or 4 times. It's quite intense because Ibiza's gotten crazy expensive. And
it has, yeah.
A few times I flew out and it was just like one night in, straight out. And, you know, the music was good, stayed till 6. Yeah. Got a flight home, didn't really see my hotel much. So, and then I did go back for my birthday week in August. And I actually did a week in Ibiza where I fell asleep after dinner and I never made it to the club. So that was like a different kind of pace that week. And it was quite nice.
I was just going to say, but that's kind of going back to what we were saying at the beginning of the podcast. Sometimes it's nice to just be able to like not have to push ourselves to go to these things, even though it's nice to obviously experience these things. But that feeling of having to go to a club for work and you really don't want to go is such a horrible feeling.
I mean, being a publicist, I don't really think I ever have to go somewhere. Also, I think I probably go out a lot to clubs way more than any other publicist, saying broadly speaking, but because it's not really like a necessary part of my job, but I just love it and I love meeting new people. And honestly, the amount of work that I get from going to a club, I walk away with like 3 new clients. It's crazy, you know. Everyone's like, oh, you're Emma, it's nice to meet you. And I'm like, who are you? And we get chatting and then it's like, oh, I've got this project that I've got and can I take your number? And every Monday I get back and then I've got an email from somebody else and it just keeps going like that.
Has all like your work kind of been like word of mouth?
Yeah. I can actually say that I've never chased a client ever. I've never gone after a client ever.
When you started out, did you ever have a wish list of clients that you would like to have or work
if
for?
If I did, I can't remember. I mean, I think definitely the fact that I worked with Amelie and Farago and Exhale was like a really, really big deal for me. I've obviously followed Amelie. I remember seeing Amelie play actually somewhere in Barcelona. I can't remember where. You know, it was that really little club at the Fort, like Montjuic.
Club 4.
At the top.
Club 4. No.
Yeah, Club Cuatro.
Oh, Club Cuatro. That was Paco Osuna's club.
No, I don't think it was then. It was, but I saw Emily there and it was when she was really just coming on to like the scene. It was a long time ago. So yeah, when they turned around and said, we'd love you to do like the Exhale opening and Emily had some releases on Exhale as well. And then I also worked with Farago's album. And they were just such a really professional, lovely team to work with.
Yeah.
And I found, I just really enjoyed it. And I love the music. You know, if you do love the music, it makes it easier. And that led me to do some bits of Lenska, which is the other label. I think definitely I've been working with Pampot on their current release. Obviously they've...
I love them.
So they were one of the first ever DJs that I met ever. At the original Row 14 in Barcelona. And I remember it like it was yesterday. They were playing in the main room and it was really sweaty and I didn't know anyone. And we all looked so different back then. And I think, I don't know who else was playing in that room that day, but it was just crazy. And that was so long ago. And I still have pictures of us from a long time. So yeah, when they finally came out, I'm like, oh, I'd really like you to do a project. It's quite like a weird feeling because they've entrusted me with something which is a big deal for them.
Yeah.
And I feel the pressure because I have a very close relationship with a lot of, a lot of the people that I work with, as in like actual friends. You know, we go out for dinners, we actually hang out, and, you know, I know their families or I know their partners, and that applies to the majority of the people that I work with. And I don't consider that unprofessional. I love that part because I really get to know that person and I get to know what they want, what they don't like. And I feel like I have so much more respect for them and vice versa, especially when it comes to being honest in terms of what we've achieved with work. So yeah, when you do get a friend that's like, oh, do you want to do this? It's quite scary. Nice.
Do you always have to like the music that the artist that you're working with plays or makes?
Controversial answer here. I've always said yes, but I have actually worked on some projects which the music isn't really something that I would listen to normally, but the person and the team behind it are so amazing and I get on with them so well that I can still do a really good job at the pitch, because at the end of the day, it's not just about the music. It is about that person that you're pitching. Just goes back to that narrative thing, you know? And at the end of the day, a lot of these platforms, they cover every single genre, whether it's drum and bass, house, like techno. So the contacts are often the same. It's not that I don't have the contacts or don't know the people. It's just that sometimes I might be a little bit more passionate about an EP if I'm hammering out every day at the gym.
Yeah. That makes sense. Have you always liked dance music?
Yeah. Actually, I was quite late when I got into dance music. Do you know my first festival was ever? First dance event ever. I was trying to think of this before we got on this podcast. I was 18 and it was Global Gathering.
Global Gathering?
Yeah, do you remember that?
No, I never went to Global Gathering.
Now I'm like, was it called Global Gathering? Yeah, it was like a festival somewhere in the UK. Don't really remember much.
Do you remember who you saw playing? Then,
no idea. I mean, it was a fleeting memory that. And then I was actually always into like rock music as a teenager. I liked heavy rock music, like just everything. The heavier the better. I loved Slipknot, Korn, all of that kind of stuff. I was like a little bit of a grungy emo type girl. It's quite funny.
Where are you?
And then, yeah, now I've transitioned from like hard rock to hard techno.
To hard techno.
Yeah, so it's either one or the other. I mean, everyone goes on about this thing at the minute, you know, the hard techno scene, and they're like, oh, it's too fast, it's too hard, it's got no soul. And I do agree, you know, there are sometimes sets that I just feel like even I don't enjoy it. No matter how hard or fast it is, it always still has to have like some element of rhythm. And as long as it has that, I can hear it in a set, you know, like I'll often go to a festival and I'm like, I just can't get into this set. And it's because there's no rhythm.
Yeah.
But I can listen to like 160 BPM, but if there's rhythm and maybe like a little vocal stab, happy days.
Yeah.
So I think I know there's a lot of probably, I don't know if it's a lot of, the hate is the right word, but like, I feel like there's kind of a lot of people saying like, they just don't like the movement that is going at the moment. It's just a phase. But I mean, I'm a runner, so I like a fast beat when I run.
I agree with you.
And I can't listen to podcasts when I'm at the gym. Like, I just don't do anything otherwise.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. If I'm walking the dog, I'll listen to a podcast. But if I'm out running, unless I'm running with you and you just like to chat for a whole hour.
Do I chat when I run?
A whole hour around Ibiza running. And
you know, it's good. It's good.
You were like, do you not have your... No, I brought my AirPods and... And then I put mine in and I was like, did you not put your AirPods in? You were like, no, I didn't pick them up. And I was like, okay, then let's just chat. And then I took practice.
It is. If you can, you know, I actually listen to a couple of podcasts. I listen to podcasts all the time. I mean, I probably do 3 podcasts a day. I don't watch TV anymore and I don't listen to the news. The first thing I do in the morning is listen to a podcast. And I listened to one the other day all about breathing through your nose. And they were saying that you try and do a run, only nose breathing. And I did 10K yesterday, 12K yesterday, just nose breathing.
What?
Yeah, it was really good. It actually brings your heart rate down. So, but also talking when you run is a good way to determine how fit you are. If you can hold someone said to me the other day in the sauna at the gym, they were like, if you can have a conversation when you're running, you're not running hard enough. I was like, no, actually, your cardiovascular system is actually at a really good level. So if you can hold a, not an intense conversation, but you're not completely breathless, that's a good thing.
I liked that run with you because you pushed me.
Yeah. Did I?
Yeah, you did. We went up some hills. We went on a different route that I would not normally do because I normally do the same route every single time. Had a good chat along the way. And then we went out for some margaritas.
Yeah, we did.
Happy days.
I can't remember where we went afterwards.
We went to Ambre.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, I love that place.
Great restaurant.
Yeah, that's a great restaurant. You love good restaurant, don't you?
I do, yeah. I do love restaurants. I don't know where that kind of came from. I just, I like to treat myself to nice places to eat. Like, you know, while I'm really healthy, I try to be. You know, I have this like, she doesn't drink at the minute. Don't get me wrong, I can party with the best of them. And I love junk food. I mean, I could eat the whole entire McDonald's menu if I really tried. But
I picked you up from the airport that same trip and you said something to me like, no, let's not eat until tomorrow. And then I picked you up and you were like, should we just go to McDonald's?
I think I got like 20 chicken nuggets and ate them at like midnight. Yeah. It was terrible. But yeah, no, I do like good restaurants. I think I tend to, when I travel everywhere, I tend to have a little list, or I do like a lot of research about like where's good to eat. Just kind of feel like when you travel, like often you're in a place not necessarily for that long, especially if it's for an event. And like, I want to know the best place to get that. And I want the best place to get that, whether it's food or drink or shopping or, you know, or like what's a must sight see, what must sight tourist kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Must see. Make the most of the time.
Where should we go in Amsterdam then for ADE?
I haven't got any time in my diary.
Sorry.
Dinner with me. Well, we've agreed to meet at the Duke of Tokyo on Wednesday at 8 o'clock.
Oh yeah, for the Thursday,
isn't it?
Yes.
A Wednesday.
Okay, so that's a karaoke night. So we need to what's our karaoke song gonna be?
It has to be country music because everybody knows that my country addiction is not closet. And I went to see Shania Twain last night.
To Birmingham?
Yeah, I went to Birmingham to see Shania Twain. It was so good. I was like, all the classics. It was amazing. We got a cowboy hat on, cowboy boots. It was so good.
Amazing. Okay, would you ever do PR for country artists?
I would absolutely do anything to do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm actually going to Nashville in 4 weeks.
So if you wanted to get into that, for example, do you think would that, I mean, obviously it's not starting from scratch because you know exactly what you're doing, but in terms of contacts and stuff, would that be like you'd have to start from the very beginning?
I mean, essentially you can translate PR into whether you're doing it for a hotel, a food brand, it's the same practice, but the contacts are different. I'm not going to hit up DJ Mag for
Shania Twain.
Nashville's leading country artist, am I? It would be a case of like completely restarting in that way, but restarting with the knowledge of like how to do PR. And already I've got a lot of people that I know that, so I go in November and I'm actually going to the Country Music Awards, which is kind of like the Brits for country music. And I never expected to be able to go. So I'm actually so excited. I'm actually going to cry when I see them because I've seen the nominations. And if some of the people that are playing, it's just going to be the best week of my life. I can't wait. I'm going to break the drinking rule then. I'm going to be like slinging whiskey in a bar, doing line dancing. I'm going to go on like a rodeo. I'm going to go like shooting in the desert. I'm just going to come back completely changed.
I love Emma. The title of this podcast is going to be From Line Dancing to Techno Stomping.
It's the other way around, isn't it?
Yes.
Techno Stomping. Techno to Tennessee. That's what you should put it
that's
as.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to put.
That's my PR coming out now.
So, so at AD, obviously.
Yeah, we've got your country song.
Okay, well, I don't know any country songs, so I'm going to have to think.
Don't worry, I've already got the song. I've already got it, don't worry.
Okay,
I'll send it to you so you can practice the lyrics.
People are going to be like, where has this come from? Surprise!
Because since I've been talking about my love for country and sharing tracks online, there is a lot of people that are coming out the closet about their love affair with country. I'm shocked. I've had so many messages this morning about country is my favorite. I'm like, oh wow, didn't expect that from you.
Really?
No, I'm not gonna say names.
Okay, well, yeah, if they want to join in, they can come. We can all sing together, get a bit of line dance going. Okay, so do you think ADE, I mean, obviously ADE, then there's IMS, and there's lots of different networking events, opportunities around the world. But what do you think are some of the best ones for anybody that maybe, for example, would like to get into the music industry? What events do you think are key to attend to mingle and meet?
I mean, I guess it depends on what level you are in the industry. If you're just trying to get into it, it's difficult to... You know, you can go to ADE and you can buy a pass. ADE to me is the most important one of the year. I actually also feel that ADE is actually about meetings, although there's like 500 parties in 5 days. I mean, it's just insane. Overwhelming. And you know what? That's the thing. I always go every year. I've been going for about 10 years to ADE. Previous to working in music, I just used to go as a raver, you know. And I even met loads of people then. You know, you can bump into people anywhere at ADE. You can just be in a coffee shop. And that's what I like about it. It is accessible for more people. Things like, you know, personally, I always go to some events like Awakenings. Time Warp is a massive one in April, yeah, if you're already in the industry, just because everybody's there. IMS, again, is the same. Sonar, I used to go to Sonar a lot, but I haven't been the last few years. It gets to a point where there's so many, you know, I have to
move
my backlog a little bit more. Yeah, but I do think ADE's good. I've cut my ship short, cut my trip short a little bit this year. And didn't think I'd have much in my diary. And then it's just kind of like the last week, it's just kind of exploded. And the other issues with ADE is so many things happen at the same time and same days.
Yeah, it's hard, yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to do 30 minutes here, and then 30 minutes there. But then that never happens because I go to an event and I see you, and then we end up going to a party that we shouldn't be at, and then I miss 4 meetings.
Sorry.
It does happen, though. You know, they are, but then, and then you end up and you're like, oh, I'm really sorry, I'm at somewhere, and they're like, yeah, you're not, I know you're not coming.
Yeah, I was trying to convince my friend Candela to change her flight on Monday morning from Shelter, and that's another one that always happens every single year.
Anywhere near Shelter on Monday morning. I'll be in the Lake District.
Come on.
No way. I'm going hiking. You know that. I'm going on a detour. I'm going to ADE and then leaving Awakenings and going straight to the Lake District to like hike 100 miles in 4 days.
Emma Chambers is not here at ADE.
You actually said it, okay? Are you going to tell everyone on this podcast about the history of this?
Yes. No, I'll leave it at that. I just changed Emma Chambers' name to Chambers sometimes, just now and again.
Developed from a previous job role, prior to music, they ended up calling me Chambers instead of Chambers. Why? Let's not go into it. But it stuck. And now Katie loves using it at every opportunity.
Absolutely.
I mean, it does kind of suit me.
It's perfect for you, Emma Chambers. So she can be Emma Chambers at ADE, and then she goes to the Lake District, and then she can be Emma Chambers again.
Okay.
So just to end, we're going to do a quick round of 5 questions. They're very quick and easy. First question is, if you had to listen to one song every day for the rest of your life, what would it be?
It's a country song, and it's the most common country song ever. And I don't care if it's such like it's that one, but it's my favorite song ever. And it's Tennessee Whiskey by Chris Stapleton.
Okay.
His voice is just so good. Even though he's just brought out a new track, which is also very good. It's a close contender, but yeah. There's another song, but no, I don't know. There's a few. If I could choose 5, but we'll go with that one for now.
We'll go with that one. Okay. What is a club that everyone should go to?
Fold.
Okay.
That's my only answer.
What would you do if you didn't work in music?
That's a really good question. I think I always wanted to work at NASA because
I
I'm really
see.
into I'm really into like the atmosphere and space and everything to do with the stars and the planets. I find it incredibly interesting. Like my it's my little geek side coming out there.
Yeah, I like that. What's your guest list rule?
If I put you on guest list and you don't go, you never ask me again for guest list and you never go to another party.
Simple as.
It just pisses me off.
Yeah,
Like,
I feel
go out
you.
of my way to put somebody on a guest list when the other thing is like, I'm not generally somebody, well, I do get a lot of requests, but I'm a publicist. Like, I'm not the artist. So I have to ask somebody else. And I don't always like doing it. I feel like it's a bit of an annoying thing to have to ask someone. So then when my guest doesn't go, I don't know.
Yeah. So this is a new part of the podcast. It's called Pass the Question, in which you ask a question for the next guest, not knowing who the guest is. But because you're the first person, I'm going to give you your question. And your question is, what is something that is always in your fridge?
Gherkins.
Like, okay, sweet and sour gherkins, or like in
No.
vinegar?
Has to be in vinegar. And the dill, like in America, you know, it's like the pickle vinegar, the dill pickle vinegar. I'd love to drink that. That's gross. I know. It's actually really good for you.
I love you drink it.
Yeah.
So they do this shot in
I've got
Toronto.
another delivery guy.
Your postman is busy today. Is it the same guy?
I can't. No, it's a
Wait.
different one. I've ordered too much stuff.
So gherkin order. So gherkin order.
Yeah,
Okay. All
gherkins.
right. Well, I'll let you
Extra
answer your
gherkins. Extra
ex.
gherkins at McDonald's as well.
I
They
was
never
just going
really
to
go
say
down.
two things about gherkins. My first gherkin thing is I always find it weird. I don't eat meat, but I will always eat somebody's gherkin that, you know, a lot of people take the gherkins out of the
Yeah.
McDonald's. I would always eat that. Like, that is the best gherkin, the one inside
And it's
McDonald's.
the one that touched the meat. So it's
No, the
like
one that's got
touched
the,
me.
no, and it's got like the little onion bits on it and the
I know,
ketchup.
but it's been on a meaty burger, so you're going to take a meat-coated gherkin.
Maybe that's what it is. I don't, it doesn't taste like meat though.
Pardon.
It's just, but it's just McDonald's meat. I don't know. Okay, and then my second thing about gherkins is, so you know the pickle juice that you were just talking about? They do these
Yeah.
shots in Toronto, and it's pickle juice with whiskey.
Oh, that
I
sounds
for,
nasty, but I'll try
oh,
one.
it is nasty.
It would be nicer with vodka because, like, you know, when you have like a martini and it's like extra dirty, or you have like a filthy martini, that's with
Yes.
olive brine. So I think like the whole vinegar olive with vodka thing, that would be fine.
All right, well, we'll try it on Wednesday, AD.
Okay. No.
Okay.
Okay.
So what's your question for the next guest? You don't know who the guest is.
My question was, what is your worst habit and what is stopping you from giving it up?
Okay. Well, you'll soon find out on the next episode what the
I
answers to
wonder
that
who's
question.
next. I don't know. I don't know who's next. I
I'll let you
don't
know. I'll let you know.
know
Thank you so
who's
much for coming on the
next.
podcast. I'm glad that we made it happen.
Finally, she
My
squeezed me
love,
for an hour of
I
content.
got us
I
chambers.
hope nobody watches this and they're like, oh, just Emma's chatting shit for like an hour.
I mean, I think we've gone from like, oh yeah, we've spoken a bit about everything, haven't we, really?
little bit serious, a little bit not so serious.
I think it's the most
Pickles and
serious chat we've ever had in
I
our
think it's the most serious chat.
lives.
I'm gonna go make a pickle sandwich now in the kitchen.
Go on then,
All
and also go and get your packages and see what you got.
right, lovely. I'll speak
Love
to you soon.
you. Thank
Love you too.
you.
Bye.
Bye.